A very warm welcome to you all. Glad you could join us for episode 120 of the Sound of Football podcast. Not even podcast. My name's Chris Oakley, and it's given me great pleasure, as ever, to welcome this week and every week, Terry DeFallon and Graham Sibley. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Now then, for this particular podcast, we are going to be sort of previewing the coming season, but not necessarily team by team and player by player and all the rest of it. Can you excuse me? If you're going to drag your chair, Terry... That was your chair, wasn't it?
It was my chair, yes.
Already we've sunk to the level of juvenile humour. Yes. Shall I start again?
Risen to the level of juvenile humour, surely.
Sorry, yes. Anyway, as I was saying, rather than preview the upcoming Premier League season, by virtue of looking at individual teams and players, we're going to be looking at perhaps the way that the game is refereed, administrated, that kind of thing. Of course, we just had the Olympics, as we mentioned last week, and Euro 2012, footballing competitions in which we saw quite an efficient flavour of refereeing during the course of that competition. The Euro 2012 as well, and similarly the football competition in the Olympics well run too, and we're just wondering how that may influence, or not as the case may be, the upcoming season. We may even throw in a debate about tackling in light of the Community Shield match that happened only yesterday, and may even talk about things like goal line technology, although I suspect we may be leaving that for a future episode so we can deal with it in full. Have a good thorough debate on that. So, enough of me rambling on. You get the picture. I'm going to come to you first, Graham, then. Yes, Euro 2012. Didn't see too much in the way of disorder and referee baiting in that. It all seemed to pass off pretty well. So, what do you reckon they did well in that competition that maybe we haven't been seeing in the Premier League of late? Better quality referees, maybe? I don't know.
I think it was a bit of that. I thought it was very very well refereed, but also I think it was very well played on the player side of it. So I don't know if the sort of like the get tough policy on tackling and descent and what have you has actually filtered through to the players now. Mm-hmm. But it did seem to be played in a relatively good spirit. Yes, of course, you can pick out individual incidents. Mm. But as far as tournaments are concerned, I think like if we remember recent tournaments where red cards and yellow cards have been handed out, sometimes three to the same player. And,
on those really good
on those really, really good days. And yeah, it was like you know, famous. I think we remember the Holland Portugal game from a few years ago, where there was I think four players sent off,
something like that. Yeah, 2006. You're talking about, are you?
I think so. Yes, yeah.
Was that,
yeah.
The World Cup to Holland.
Limbs scattered all over the pitch. Yeah,
yeah. And but it
was a brilliant game.
Well, it wasn't really, but it was. But I mean, in this tournament, we. It did seem to be that the referees were keeping their yellow cards in the pockets, which did help, obviously, and only really brought them out when they really needed to. And I think it's something that you saw quite a bit more of last year in the Premier League. Obviously, now when they're going for their cards, they're sometimes almost as like to go for their reds as they are for their yellows with tackles. I know there's been a lot of debate of saying, well, not a lot of debate, there's just been a lot of people who have come up with this lovely cliche of saying, oh, you know what's going to happen next? They're going to outlaw tackling altogether, aren't they?
Yeah, it's going to be like basketball.
Yeah.
Non-contact sport.
Non-contact sport, isn't it? Yeah. Bloody hell, yeah.
Start playing with their hands, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know, yeah. They just try and take the game away from you. They don't want it to be like entertaining, do they, anymore?
That's right, that's exactly how they sound as well.
Yeah.
To a man, every man jack of them.
Yeah, and then we have to say, we've got to cut away to a break now, but like, call LBC whenever you like.
LBC is a local London radio station, which is attracts people of that nature for those who don't live in the London area.
don't think there'll be anybody regularly listens to LBC listening to this. Anyway.
Well, it's a talk sport, I suppose, is also that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, far be it for me to add that. But,
and Radio 5, like.
To an extent.
In fact, any sports radio where they actually ask for like, the input from the people who
I'm
actually...
I'm pretty certain if we had a phone in, it would probably be no different.
Can you imagine such a thing?
So, Ryan, where are you calling from?
I'm on the M4. anyway, I mean, but mentioning the Olympics there, Terry, I mean, there's also been much chat in the closing stages of the Olympics about how wonderful Olympic athletes are, and the fact that they go about their sport for all the right reasons and how admirable they are, that they have the right principles and all the rest of it. And yet you've got your overpaid footballers. I'm going to go into that voice again. I know it with a strange sense of inevitability. You know, these football players who supposedly are all in it for the money and they don't care, they kick lumps out of each other. I mean, can we really expect there to be any positive influence to sort of reflect off of the Olympics back into the Premier League? Or is it going to come down to sensible administrating and refereeing, as Graham said?
Well, no, I'm formally in the latter there. I think if the Community Shield is anything to go by, then it promises to be just as rambunctious as it always has been. It is worth bearing in mind that Olympic athletes usually have to put in one pretty bitty hefty shift once every couple of years, or for the ultimate, once every 4 years. This is why the Olympics is so fantastic to watch, because the intensity of the competition is such, because they only get one shot at it, conceivably in a lifetime. But it does change the dynamics of the way that they approach the sport. They haven't got time for histrionics. They haven't got time for rambunctiousness. They don't have time for mind games. Football, league football, professional league football, is a story. And it has episodes every week. Mm. And they have to put, you know, to play their part in that. And so, you know, there's a whole dimension of competition which just can't replicate with Olympic sport. These guys have to work hard every week, and they get paid a lot of money to do it, but then they're expected to deliver huge results as a consequence of the money that they're generating. It's a completely different scenario. And so, no, I don't necessarily think you can expect them to take on the Olympic spirit, unless, of course, they take lots and lots of drugs. but, you know, that's probably best not to go down that road.
Yeah, but they probably do anyway.
Well, that's your opinion, obviously. But, I mean,
you're outnumbered,
I think there is a certain sort of thinking, well, hang on a second, you know, when did Olympic athletes get held up as sort of, you know, sporting, you know, heroes necessarily? Just because Team GB have won a load of medals, because Team GB have just won a load of medals, and it's great, and everyone's really happy, and everyone's looking at Jess Ennis and Mo Farah and the example that they say, and rightly, we're all inspired by that. But I think it's unfair to then say to the professional footballers, well, you have to act like that. Because, I mean, you know, the professional football might say, well, okay, well, fine. Well, if I don't have to perform once every 4 years, then that's fine. I will be nice and I'll be sporting. But I have to do this every week. And I'm expected to win, sometimes twice a week. And I'm expected to win. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit unfair to criticise them.
Mm-hmm. And you could argue, I suppose, that made a sum of the kind of worldwide audience that's watching Premier League every week, then you could say that the players are under that much more pressure to perform in front of that many more people, etc., etc., etc.
Well, that is exactly my argument, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I mean, it's always annoying when, you know, they behave like they do. I mean, come on. I mean, it's all part of the show, really, isn't it? I mean, we kind of love that, don't we?
A little bit of that, yeah. Do we want it to be completely sanitised?
It does make easy content.
Yeah. Well, I've just whittled on about it for the last 3 minutes. So, I mean,
you do very, very well.
Yeah, thank you. I'll stop talking now. You can do some talking now.
Okay. Yes.
Section two, Graham speaks, it says here on my computer.
I can only really echo what Terry said, really, is the fact that, you know, footballers are under a hell of a lot more spotlight. I mean, you will see Mo Farah doing adverts now for the next few months. You'll see him turning up on talk shows, but you won't have Jeff Shreve sticking a microphone in his face every Sunday, asking him to explain why he just lost to someone who is perhaps ranked three places below him in the world.
Yes. Eloquently put there, Sibler.
Well, I suppose that's it. I mean, like we look at football, and everything is so results driven. We look at the Olympics and we're saying, oh, well done, you finished third.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jolly,
yeah.
Jolly good amateur
that
chap.
Really, really, really doesn't cut it in football.
No, no, that's right.
I mean, it does if you're Arsenal.
This is in no way to take anything away from the achievement of our Olympic heroes.
No,
heroes
of
all
course not.
To a man and woman. But, you know, it well, is
exactly. if,
different.
If, yeah, if you and get third in the Olympics, that means there's two people in the world better than you, and there's 6,999,998 who aren't.
Who aren't, quite so. Yeah. Yeah, whereas that doesn't really matter in professional football. What they want about, what they want to know about is how many goals you scored and how many points your team has got and where you finish in the league.
Yes.
That's winning how week to week. Success is measured. And that's how, obviously, wages are consequently measured.
Yes.
Which is what they do for their living. So, yeah.
Going back to the aforementioned Community Shield match, which in which Ivanovic got sent off for Chelsea and bookings left, right and centre, there was echoes there, I thought, of the 1974 Charity Shield, but then that's because I'm a hopeless nostalgic. Yeah, the fact that there were, well, there were two men in centre, as we know, Kevin Keegan, Billy Bremner. Back in that era, there was lots of head-scratching and soul-searching about, oh, yeah, we must try and rid this terrible element from the game. And I suppose you could argue that they've done that to a considerable extent, but to the point where now the respect campaign and other similar things, do you think they actually work, those things? I mean, putting those sort of messages into players' heads, I always get the impression that once they're out on the pitch, that probably nothing could be further from their mind because they're focused on, you know, winning football matches rather than anything else, and it's all a bit hurly-burly out there.
Well, I think it all gets lost in the narrative, doesn't it, though? I mean, what you get is you have... I think let's focus on someone, say, like Harry Redknapp, for instance.
Why not?
And we usually do.
Why not? I mean, like, let's just pick a name out.
What a
random
best way to preview a season than by talking about an out of work
yeah. Someone who may not figure this season.
But you would guess by you know what he would say at the end of the match if we're having a look at a bad tackle made by his player. You would say, well, you know, 20 years ago, the referee wouldn't have even gone to his pocket.
See also Mark Lawrenson.
Yeah. If it was the tackle was on his player, you will get a different narrative. You will get something like, well, I thought these tackles were meant to be phased out of the game. You know, I think, like, yeah, and blah, 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 blah. You know, so it is just something for people to just say, isn't it?
It's like plastic pitches, like 3G pitches.
Yeah.
But you know, most managers who have to take their team to a 3G, to a Leon Lennon, going to Helsinki, saying, oh, I don't agree with 3G pitches. Steadfast is saying he doesn't, really getting his excuses in early just in case his team gets beaten in there. When in fact, if anything, the surface on a 3G pitch is probably truer than on a grass pitch.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, that's, you know, and Redknapp, going back to the great man, was making sure he was guarded enough about 3G pitches when Tottenham went to Young Boys Bern a couple of seasons ago, would have been now, for that qualifying game, which they negotiated their way through. So, you know, no harm done there. But yes, this is all part of the, you know, let's get the excuses in. Well, we don't see what happens off the pitch, of course. We don't see what the relationship is between the clubs and the referees and the officials then. And we don't know to what extent. I'm not suggesting that the whole thing is an act, but I am suggesting that perhaps there is an understanding between players, coaches and referees that stuff will go on the pitch that will be said that is not necessarily reflective of how they feel, but that unfortunately when the dander is up, some things can't be helped. And in an ideal world, they'd like to change that. But, you know, it's probably a very slow process.
I think what you have is that the culture that you described, Chris, in the 70s is one that grew up out of weak refereeing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would go along with that. Yeah.
That basically it just comes along, and this is what happens in any sport, that and usually ends up in rule changes, that if refereeing is weak or it doesn't protect the players enough, then you will see levels, or you'll see escalations, won't you?
We watched a pre-season friendly at Whiteleith the other week in which a player, and I don't remember who it was, I can't remember which team it was, but he verbally abusing a referee on the pitch. I mean, I know it was a pre-season referee, but it was clearly and unambiguously verbally abusing. I mean,
before the end of the game, there was a 18-man set too, wasn't there?
Yeah, as well.
Nothing more than handbags, but, yes, of but course. Sort of thing that that, yeah. that was allowed to fester because
the referee wasn't able to, for whatever reason, either because he felt too intimidated by what was going on, or perhaps he felt that it was a pre-season friendly and so it shouldn't happen, and it should be, these things can go. But at that level, to be blunt, that really isn't necessary. I mean, at the very, very ultra high level, where there's where everyone's on the absolute ragged edge, then perhaps it's kind of, to an extent, understandable. I don't know,
but I
still think that referees do have a duty to be strong, and of course, players and coaches have a real responsibility to at least understand the pressures the referees are under. One thing is clear, that if the FA's doom-mongering is true, then there are fewer and fewer referees around in England, and less of a take-up of referees as well. And who can blame them if that's what they're going to be? It's particularly like on the park. Yeah. Goodness knows what it must be like on the park on Sunday morning. And like, why would you get up and have to put up with that? You wouldn't want to do. Would you?
Not, I think another thing, though, is that nowadays, obviously, it's huge business at the top end. And what the authorities are afraid of, I suppose, is that if you allow tough tackles to go in, then sooner or later someone is going to sue another player. And we almost had it a few years ago, didn't we, with Dean Saunders?
Yes.
And they tried everything they could possibly do to keep that out away.
It was Paul Elliott, wasn't it? Elliott. Dean Saunders Paul Elliott. It's a striker on a centre half.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah. But it was hoped to keep it out of the courts, because once you open that gate, then then everything chaos ensues. So you have to try and make sure that you can police it yourself. But the more money that gets involved, the harder it gets to do that.
The rule is gloriously ambiguous though, because it's nothing specific about the tackle. If it's dangerous or if it's serious foul play, then you punish accordingly.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And as long as the referee looks at that and says, "What, you were out, you didn't have control."
But according to Andy Townsend, if you get the ball, it's okay, isn't it?
Well, I think we've probably been over this, but and leave it to Clive Tilsley to explain. And to his credit, he has repeatedly attempted to explain to whoever's been sat next to him at the time, that in fact the ball has very little to do with, there's nothing, it's not in the rules. It's just a question of dangerous play. If it's dangerous play, if it's serious foul play, then that's what you do, and it doesn't really matter. That I'm reminded of that Vincent Kompany foul for which he was sent off for in a game last season, and I can't remember who the opponents was. And he went on Facebook and said that it was a disgrace and that that this was not how the game should be going, because he took the ball not completely cleanly but pretty cleanly, but he left the ground and he had 2 feet going in, if I remember.
Yeah.
And if he'd mistimed that by a split second, he could have ended whoever's career it was.
Yeah.
And that's what they're worried about. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Vincent Kompany would say, "Look, I'm an expert, I know what I'm doing." And they said, "Well, actually, not being funny, mate, but if you'd just been off by a few seconds, that could have, or even less than that, then you could have really, really damaged someone." So it's difficult. It's hard to criticise, to say, hard for a professional to say, "Well, look, hang on, I know how to tackle players. That's what I do."
Yeah.
Well, at the same time saying, "Well, actually, maybe you should think about that, maybe just consider that there are other ways of getting the ball off players."
It was on Nanny, wasn't it, if I remember rightly?
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
So it was in the Manchester Derby. Okay, yeah. Right. Okay.
Hootenanny.
it was a hootenanny of a tackle, that must be
it. It was, yes. Yeah. It was at the end of the year, wasn't it? I think, yes. Kind of moving on away from sort of dangerous tackling, other things that referees are going to have to deal with next, not this coming season, about to start, but the season after, they've got sort of goal line technology. That will be something else they'll have to sort of juggle with. And the technology system appears to have been chosen, and so that's going to be a whole other rat's nest to kind of get in amongst it. I mean, the whole thing of whether the ball fully crossed the line. There was somebody the other day, I just sort of mentioned this briefly, as I said, we'll probably go back to this at some point in the future, but I don't know if it was our old friend Brian Glanville who said that surely if the ball goes if you take out the ambiguity of the rule and basically say if part of the ball goes over the line, then it counts. Then that makes it, that takes out all the problems. And I thought, I'm not sure I agree with that. What's your thoughts on that? I just thought you still got to kind of prove that it went partially over the line without a system in place, I suppose. But just to underline the fact that this whole argument is very complicated.
Very. But then again, I mean, like, you know, it's in most cases. I mean, yes, you can always pick out things like Roy Carroll fishing the ball from behind the line, and Lampard's goal in the World Cup. And those are all very famous examples. And the one last year, in the Championship, that didn't actually go in at all, just went to the side of it. But you know, it always strikes me is that the people who want the precision of goal line technology are probably the same sort of people who like to make sure that a bill is split correctly.
Harsh.
And you know who you are.
Hang on a minute. I'm opposed to dark goal line technology.
There's a lot of people now going through
the prawn.
There's a lot of people now going through their
iPod. Starter.
There's a lot of people going through their iPod now saying, I wonder what other podcasts I've got downloaded on here. Where the lobster?
I think we should have we should count up over the course of the season. It's not going to be absolutely empirical, but we should count up over the course of the season how many goal line incidents there are.
Well, it's interesting because I think isn't it going to be in the Confederation Cup?
I believe it will be.
Yes.
And I can guarantee you there will not be a single incident used.
Yeah, I mean, competition. That's only going to be a handful of games. So that's but over the next season, of course. Domestically in European football or the Premier League or Champions League, there'll be plenty of opportunities for this, and it will be really interesting to see how many instances there are of a ball either crossing or not crossing a line, and perhaps a contentious decision being given as a consequence. I'm just thinking about how much all this stuff is going to cost and whether or not it's really worth going to all the trouble of it. And so this will be an opportunity for us to see. You know,
assess it on ongoing
now that we
basis.
Know it's coming, we can assess it on that basis and say, right, okay, well, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be that surprised if in the combined Premier and Champions League that it, you know, maybe half a dozen occasions that the ball, you know, maybe hit the bar and then just crossed the line or was cleared off the line, you know, and the ball and a goal was given or not given. As a consequence, I think that's an interesting exercise for us to go back to and revisit. You know, when we're short of things to talk about,
or just completely ignore.
Well, you know, all ideas are on the table, and all ideas can easily be put in the bin. It's not a problem.
That's good.
Oh yes, I think we should have on. Sorry, go on, Graham.
Or in the recycling, because we are. We're very, very responsible on this.
With our ideas. We always try to recycle our ideas.
Yeah. We make do and mend all the time.
Yeah. We're quite happy to donate our ideas to other podcasts if they're running a bit short on ideas. It's not a problem.
We're nothing if not charitable. Yes. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yes, I think on the Sound of Football website, I think we should have a lineometer, kind of like a totaliser, like they used to have on Blue Peter, so we can see how many, it goes up as the season goes on, and we see how many times a ball crossed the line, dubious incidents and that kind of thing. Graham, I suggest you go off and do that now. No, don't. There was one point, actually, I must apologise, I'm professional and all that, but there was one point I was going to mention going back to the whole tackling thing. I must go back to this. I was just going to say...
bit of a late tackle here.
You could say, yeah. We did a podcast a while back where we said about, is it possible to make a virtue out of cheating in the game? You know, the whole thing of diving and simulation and all the rest of it. And I think we made a pretty good argument for that. But I wonder if similarly, going back to the whole thing about playing in an aggressive fashion, a very physical fashion, whether a team could be given justification for... being set up in such a way that their main way of playing is to use tough tackling, being physical, barging players off the ball, whatever you want to call it. Because we have to go back to Leeds again, sorry, and all that. But back then, you could argue that that was a team that said, we've got the players that are well suited to that kind of game. And so they went out and played it. And I wonder if in this day and age a team could similarly do it again. If there was a manager that came along and thought, I'm going to be bold here and I'm actually going to set my team up. I'm sure there are probably people listening in sort of, you know, actually hurling names at us now, sort of saying, oh, what about so-and-so, what about so-and-so? But could a team actually do that and come out of that with any respect for adopting that approach, do you think?
Well, not really. I suppose the most recent ones, teams that would come to mind, aren't ones that are at the top at the top of the table. They're teams like Stoke, Blackburn under Mark Hughes, and also you could probably say Arsenal under George Graham.
Wimbledon.
Yes.
Back when it was fashionable to hate Wimbledon.
Yes.
One of the reasons was because they were regarded as very physical, as well as being a long ball team. They were regarded as being very, very physical.
I mean, I'm not suggesting that a team could rely completely, because obviously you need to have somebody who can actually sort of score goals and show a bit of skill. But obviously I just think that it's, generally speaking, become unfashionable now, and largely because of the whole reaction that the public would give and the newspapers and whatever reaction to very thuggish teams. But I'm just sort of thinking,
the rule changes have had a contribution. Yeah, the rule changes.
When the Premier League came in, I mean, like, it did sort of like come down with a big clampdown on especially elbowing. I remember in the mid and early 90s, elbowing was one thing that was really stamped down, and stamping as well.
Ironically, stamping as well,
wasn't there? That was a popular.
When it became clear that there was huge amounts of money about to come into the game,
and also
game.
When there were lots of cameras, when there was a camera every game.
Yes.
Before there was a camera every game, and most players could get away with a hell of a lot. Mm.
Like, off the ball incidents and things.
Yeah.
Technology in football, eh? Bloody hell.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, like, you know, when Paul Davis got banned for, was it, 8 games for breaking someone's jaw, it was, that was punching him. They were, like, absolutely clocking him right across there. For racist comments, so, and why not? So.
Well, fair enough.
Well, yes, I mean, an eye for an eye and all of that. Yeah, totally.
I just wonder if despite the restrictions on the game these days, whether a team could be kind of, shall we say, creative enough to actually make a case to referees, or players could make a case to referees and sort of say, well, look, you know, I did this, I did that, it wasn't anything so bad. And then, if they did manage to get away with it, other teams might then follow suit and you might find a trend. But that's, I think you find
individual players who manage to get away with it.
Van
Bommel is
the Mark Van Bommel.
I just
really say
one man brings to mind.
But I would argue that Mark Van Bommel is nowhere near as dirty as people say he is.
Oh no, yeah.
because he's the king of the niggly foul, and he's very very physical for sure. But you know, I mean, a guy with his reputation and yet seemed to escape so many yellow cards and red cards. And it wasn't because he had pictures. I mean, I know it's, you know, you think that it's because he had pictures, but it clearly wasn't. We suggest to me that he was nowhere near as dirty as that, or isn't as dirty as that. It's just that, you know, he does present the appearance of that because, you know, he does stick his boots. It's possible that they don't make him like him anymore. And that, again, I suspect that is something that the rule changes have done, is that the rule changes have definitely discouraged physical challenges, very, very strong physical challenges where there's a strong likelihood of injury for reasons we've just discussed. Mm-hmm. And consequently, the youth teams are now looking for players like that. Possibly one of the reasons why Brazil are maybe going backwards. Now, this is not my theory. This is one proffered by a team, Vickery, which I'm happy to regurgitate. And that is that the Brazilians became preoccupied with building very, very large central midfielders, large, rangy central midfielders. And then Barcelona came along with their Lionel Messi's, and suddenly,
Dutch.
You know, and Spain came along and have not so much reinvented the game, but made the game far less physical. And then suddenly, Brazil look dated, and indeed they lost the gold medal, or forced it for another gold medal, indeed. With a team that's expected to be the nucleus of the team to play in the World Cup in 2014.
They did lose to a very, very good Mexico.
Yeah, I didn't see the game, so I won't go into it. But you could stitch together an argument suggesting that Brazil have gone down a bit of a cul-de-sac.
Yes.
And that the game has kind of moved on, and they've gone, oh, hang on, we need to start producing diminutive, you know, attacking midfielders to start, you know, we need more Neymars. And not more Gilberto Silvas.
Yes.
Very nicely put, if you don't mind my saying so. And that's probably a good point at which to leave this week's discussion. I hope that was stimulating for you on one level or the other. Of course, we ask you to get in touch with us. We always do. You can get us on Twitter, at Sound of Football. You can visit the blog site, the website, sofpodcast.com is the new snappy URL. sofpodcast.com or facebook.com/soundoffootball. Send us your comments, send us your thoughts, tell us whether the way forward is to steer clear of the aggressive physical style of the game, or maybe you have a different opinion. Tell us about your goal line technology thoughts and so on and so forth. Anything we've discussed, or indeed anything else, get in touch. We strongly urge you to do so.
Can we do an entire season preview without once talking about actual football matches?
Yes. Yes,
if we can string this out to know, May.
In your face on the podcast. There's you like say, yeah, I fancy there's going to come full some blah, blah, blah for the Champions League spots.
I think it'll take Eden Hazard at least 12 months in order to get used to the pace of the Premier League before
We're only joking.
No, we love you. We love you really.
Yeah.
We don't listen to you.
But
we
love us you. We're good.
Knows us talking.
Rude. Yes. I'm keeping it in.
Yeah. Of course
that's
you will.
That's your new catchphrase.
And it's making
me keeping it in.
Every time you say something naughty, I'm like, I'm keeping it in.
Nothing rude about that at all. If we put it on a t-shirt.
That sounds a bit rude as well.
Don't tell me. I'm keeping it in.
I'm keeping it in. Right, anyway.
It's a rich seam of humour to.
Oh, let's move on. Let's go. I think he's actually what you
Yeah, let's go. That's it. So, thanks everyone for listening in. Join us again for episode 121 next week. But for now, for myself, Terry, and from Graham, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.